Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Welcome to The Poisoner's Cabinet. I'm Sinead.
And I'm Nick.
And this is your weekly podcast exploring the lives of the great poisoners and macabre murders from across the centuries and creating curious cocktails inspired by the tales we tell. And it's episode 149.
Oh, those 40s whizzed by.
Whizzed by.
Whizzed by.
Yes,
did.
You were very annoyed about the 30s.
The 30s took forever.
Yes, it was the time of the Great Depression.
Exactly.
And
the 40s flew by.
Flew by, yeah. As we're nearly at 150.
That's mad.
We are going to take our season break after episode 150. So 150, that is going to be the end of season 3. Big season 3 finale coming up.
Is there?
Yes, it's all new, okay. Nick. I do this right. To you every year.
I better do something with that then.
Don't worry, I've got it all planned out for you.
Oh, good, okay.
After that, it means we are taking a little break, so don't be disturbed if there's suddenly a break. People who are listening to this in the future, there's no difference to you whatsoever. The episodes will line up. But yes, 149.
Pretty exciting.
How are you, Nick?
I'm all right.
Yes.
Yeah, I've got a week off next week. Looking forward to that.
Ooh, it's going to be fun.
Quite exciting. Not quite what I had planned.
No, the great decorating is unfortunately on hold.
So, but yeah, people who have been observing my fabric choices and paints, unfortunately, the big redecoration has to be put on hold for a short while. Mm. So I should just be sitting around in my pants all week. So no decorating, no painting, none of that. It's just a week of sitting around eating snacks.
Yeah. You did order the fabric, so you can be draped in the fabric in your pants eating snacks.
There is a large bulge of fabric sitting in the workroom. Waiting to be cut up into different shaped windows.
So. I mean, it sounds much better than for most people than the idea of decorating for a week. You actually sitting around in your pants.
But yes, it'll be nice.
It'll be nice, relaxing.
I might find some PlayStation games. I haven't played a game for ages on the PS4, so I might do that.
Oh, I played a game recently, The Excavation of Hobbs Barrow.
Oh, you were talking about that on the Switch.
Pixelated, sort of old styley game. Oh, it's creepy.
Might buy a Switch.
Yeah, buy a Switch. Fuck
yeah, that'll do. Why not?
Any poisonings this week?
It's been too busy at the moment. So no, I'm going to go no.
Well, a couple of things very quickly. Oh. If there's rumblings, it's because someone is drilling next door.
Yes, unexpected drillings.
Or a ghost.
Or a ghost drilling.
That is a ghost electrician is trying to make their way through. Also, thank you to anyone who has joined us following my TV debut at the weekend.
That was bizarre.
Very, very random. Got a message from Talk TV, which is Rupert Murdoch's channel from Talk Radio.
Just our sort of thing. Sinead and I are regular viewers.
If you have joined us from that appearance, welcome.
You're in for a shock.
Yeah, but if you love murder and poison and everything, stay with us. But yes, that was quite bizarre. That was me live on TV talking about Britain's first serial killer in between some rants about Brexit. It's just me popping up going, hello.
Hello.
Hello. Ooh, Marianne Cotton. Ooh, she was a wrong one. Everyone who's joined us from TikTok, you're very, very welcome.
Yeah,
you
know what you're in for, so.
Oh, yes. Lovely, delicious people on TikTok who have been joining us from there. I'm really glad you found us. If you are enjoying our videos, Nick will be making his debut next week.
I've been threatening this for a while now.
Yeah.
So it's probably about time before Sinead does actually beat me to death.
Yeah, you're going to be sitting at home in your pants all week. I think that's TikTok gold.
No one needs that.
Well, speaking of sitting around in your pants and making questionable TV debuts, I think it is time for us to thank our delicious Patreon subscribers.
We certainly should. And first up this week, we have the marvellously named Felicity Von Kittenberg.
Oh my god. Tina Malia.
And Rose Piri Sawyer.
Lizzie G.
Rebecca Moreno.
Emily.
And Reno Llewellyn. Thank you very much, darlings.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. You lovely, lovely, sexy Patreons. We had fun on Patreon this week. Did a big story.
We did a big story.
Big story for us locals
in
Canterbury. Big old
local story.
Oh, yes. Murder in the cathedral.
Big old cathedral story.
Lots of history. And we had a lot of fun, actually.
That was good. A bit of history.
It was great. It was really good fun.
Who doesn't love a bit of murder in a church?
And your comment about the monks chanting has ruined everybody. It absolutely broke them. And I was chuckling about that for days, actually.
Nice.
My going,
it's funny.
It's funny. Well, Nick, are you ready?
Oh, yes.
To drink cocktails and talk about poison?
Oh, I could do with a cocktail.
Oh, I think it's time. Or we could drink poison and talk about cocktails.
Yeah, definitely fancy a cocktail.
Okay, let's
go
with the first one.
That's sort of mood.
Hooray, hooray, hooray. It is my story this week, but we can't possibly have a story without a cocktail in hand. As you know, dear listeners, every week we choose a secret ingredient that is inspired by the tale that we tell, and it will flavour our cocktail of the week. My story is my pick, and this week's secret ingredient, Nick, is phosphorus.
Phosphorus.
I went big.
You went big and poisony.
I went big, poisony, bold.
Yes.
If Talk TV has taught me nothing.
Perfect, perfect ingredient. Some lovely, lovely phosphorus.
Yes, it's a little bit of a phosphorus special this week. And I thought, let's just go with it.
Absolutely.
So, has the phosphorus delivery come?
So yes, the truck arrived earlier.
Very, very slowly driven down the street.
There are barrels of phosphorus lining the garden.
Oh, lovely.
So I've got a selection of red and white phosphorus.
Oh, good knowledge. That'll come in handy later.
Oh, good. That's about my knowledge of it. So I couldn't tell you the difference. I'm assuming they're different colours, but apart from that, no idea.
You would think.
One would hope, but probably not. It's probably something to do with the molecules.
Stop saying that. Now I'm questioning my research. I don't know. But anyway, with phosphorus.
Yes.
What have you come up
with? Well, I mean, there's not a lot out there that has actually phosphorus as an ingredient, unsurprisingly. Though I was doing some research, and it was quite interesting. Phosphate sodas were a big thing before carbonated drinks. So in the States, well, predominantly in America, where you had sort of like drinks parlors and things like that.
The soda fountain.
Like a soda fountain type thing. Oh, yeah. They were made with phosphates.
Oh, and I suppose they were.
Yeah, rather than carbonated beverages. But they quickly tailed off once sort of Coca-Cola and stuff like that came along and the sort of ice cream parlours and things like that took over.
Yeah.
But yeah, they were the original sort of sodas. That's interesting. I haven't got any of those.
No phosphates here.
No phosphates here.
Okay, probably the explodey death was the
And there
the
are
problem.
A couple of cocktails called like red phosphorus and vanilla phosphorus and white phosphorus, and they all just sound dreadful.
Oh, do they?
Yes. Well, take this much gin and this much vodka and that much rum and put some Gatorade and put some sour mix and do this, and then they just sound horrible.
But they glow. Gatorade is very glowy.
Well, I did try and look at a glowy thing.
Yes.
I thought, oh, can we do a glowy thing? I didn't have time to get glowy things in, unfortunately.
Did you just get some glow sticks that we can wave around?
Oh, I didn't think of that.
Oh.
Failed miserably on that.
Do you not have some from your old raving days?
Not that alive anymore. They've still got any glow power in them. I'd be long since dead by now.
You just get dead and wizened. Pour through your stuff. You got glow sticks and that sort of, what is it, the high-vis jacket.
Yeah.
No shirt with a whistle. Till dawn.
Always a good look. I have never done such a thing. How dare you impugn my reputation?
No, you were much more leather and feathers kind of person.
I don't know why that's just sprung to mind. Have you heard the new? Have you heard the German Eurovision intro?
No, I've not heard any.
It's called Eurovision. Glitter and Blood.
Whoa.
I don't know why leather and feathers made me think of that.
Leather and feathers, glitter and blood.
Yeah, but it's this mad sort of heavy rock
thing
called Glitter and Blood. And it's like, oh, bloody brilliant.
I always love Germany's entry in the Eurovision. It's coming soon and none of us can afford to see it.
No, absolutely. Anyway, enough about that.
Okay, so we're not having anything that's
called
phosphorus.
We're not having any of those.
Nothing glowy, and glowy will become obvious soon.
Yeah.
But what have you come up with, sir?
We are having a matchstick Sazerac.
I knew you were going to go match.
Matchstick Sazerac.
Okay, so
the picture you put up was a match.
Yes, because it's hard to sort of show phosphorus rather than just the periodic table. It's like, But yes, match. And also, it does tie in with the story a bit.
Well, I should hope so.
Yes, yes. A matchstick Sazerac. We love Sazerac.
Well, this is our third Sazerac variation.
I know. It's almost as if you're biased.
Almost as if I like them.
I like the idea. Well, I think it is high time for us to sashay into the Poisoner's Cabinet kitchen and shake up a storm. So we'll see you in a minute.
We'll see you in a bit.
And we're back.
Hello.
So, Nick, we have the matchstick Sazerac.
Yeah, we do.
Now, this one, you shouted various things at me from the kitchen and then went, no, never mind.
Yeah, but come on, look. And then, oh, no, it's no, no, my... oh, it didn't work.
And then you were going, no, kept going, can you see that? No, it looks like a lovely drink. It looks like a lovely Sazeraki style drink in the very nice new glasses.
New glasses. See, because I didn't have enough glasses.
IKEA glasses with a big old lump of ice.
Yeah.
But you said smell it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I did.
It has a smell.
Has a smell.
I don't know what it is. Though I'm awful sometimes on the spot like this. My instinct is to go nail varnish remover.
I can promise you it's not nail
which makes
varnish
it
remover.
Sound awful, but something fruity that's not fruity in there.
Well, let's give it a go.
Should we taste it and make this stop?
Yeah.
All right, cheers. Matchstick Sazerac. It's good.
I mean, it's good.
It's good. Oh, hang on. What's happening? Oh, there's an after burn. What the fuck?
That's actually interesting.
Oh, that is. So Sazerac, lovely, smooth, got a dusting of absinthe in it, hasn't it?
Yeah.
No, that one had a lingering feeling of something dangerous. What the hell?
Oh, that's
was
interesting.
That?
Yeah. Well, okay, what I'm going to do, when we break, I'm going to make one without a secret ingredient.
Okay.
And then we're going to compare and contrast.
Right, so a normal Sazerac has rye, absinthe, and vermouth in it, is it? No?
Oh, no.
I can never remember.
So Sazerac is basically, there are a few different ways to make it. Mm-hmm. Some people say cognac was the original sort of French cognac shipped over to New Orleans. Other people, use, say, rye, bourbon. This actually uses, shall I reveal?
No, wait. Calvados.
No.
Fuck.
The confidence there.
I was so sure. Yeah. There is an aftertaste. When you
is it, is it a good one?
It's not a bad one. It's just a lot. This is a spiky. That's the only way I can describe it. The aftertaste is spiky on the tongue.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I don't know if it's from the secret ingredient or not. No, so this Sazerac is actually using scotch.
Oh, okay.
It's using scotch. So a mix of scotch and bourbon
nice.
In this one with the sugar, the Peychaud's bitters and some Angostura and things like that you would have in a traditional Sazerac. Mm-hmm. Also a spritz of absinthe.
Nice.
What makes this one different is that I've smoked the glass.
Oh my God.
Using matchsticks.
Oh really?
Yeah. So
I heard none of that.
That's why I was what I was calling because when I had done that and I put the ice cube in and you could actually see the smoke.
Okay.
Above, sort of floating above the drink, because what you do basically is you have your matchstick,
turn
you
the
light
glass
it,
upside
get,
down.
Get it burning, blow the matchstick out, and then I put it on a little candle thing, and then turn the glass upside down. So as the match continues to smoke, it goes into the glass. Before that, I gave the glass a spritz of absinthe, so the inside was coated with absinthe. So hopefully, that smoke would sort of have something to sort of stick to. And then I made the rest of the drink, flipped the glass over, and. The you could see the sort of the smoke swirling in the bottom of the empty glass, and then put your big chunky ice cube in and then pour the drink in. Unfortunately, by that time most of the smoke had then since dissipated, so it was difficult.
Oh, God.
It was difficult to sort of get on camera on film, but I don't know, perhaps it's like a psychosomatic thing, because I know it's in there, but I think I can taste it, or I think I can certainly smell it.
Yeah,
that sort of smoky match.
Well, I don't know if I get smoky from it. I mean, now you've said it, that I'm getting smoke. Maybe it's a scotch, to be honest.
I've purposely chosen not a
it's not
heavily,
an Islay.
Heavily Islay peaty scotch, because I thought that would be too much with smoke. But there's definitely a slightly sort of acridy sort of thing, which I think is the smoke, which I don't find particularly unpleasant. I actually quite...
Is it phosphorus poisoning? This is it.
I mean, this could be the way we go. But even without that, I think this would be a very, very decent drink.
Yeah, it's very tasty and it'll get you there. So matches today are made from a variant of phosphorus.
Yeah.
That's a really roundabout way of saying. So it's more red phosphorus rather than white phosphorus. And we're going to come on to that in a bit. But it's still got it in there. So you've killed us.
Well, I've not sort of ground up hundreds of matches. and sort
haven't
of,
you?
And put them, dissolve them into the drink. Isn't that how you make meth? Is that matches or something? I don't know. Did I see that in Breaking Bad or did I make that up? I don't know.
I think you might have made that up. Isn't it just Sudafed?
I don't know. I remember seeing sort of people scraping matches. Perhaps I don't know, random dream.
So I don't. It's definitely got something to it, but I don't know if it's the scotch that's changing
things.
That's
what I say. So I should do one which is unsmoked.
Okay.
And then we will compare and contrast.
We're going to have several Sazeracs tonight. I have to edit this episode at some point and I want to make it...
tomorrow job.
Well, I think it's delicious.
Good.
It's very rare that we have a spiky drink. With the matchstick Sazerac firmly in hand, spikes and all, are you ready for a story?
Ooh, go on then.
Oh, hurrah. As I said, it is a bit of a phosphorus special this week. Every now and then I roll out my patented specials where I've got lots of stories and I think they're not a whole episode's worth. And then I think, wait a minute, let's delve deep into the history of phosphorus, because there are several really good stories associated with phosphorus.
Not much is known about its childhood.
Actually, there's quite a lot known about phosphorus's childhood, and you will enjoy that.
Good, good.
The early makings of a cocktail, some might say. But yes, dear old phosphorus, the 15th element.
Okay.
Devil's element, it's called.
Is it?
It is.
Shouldn't that be sulfur or something like that?
But they call it the devil's element because it burns, and it's a bit glowy at times. I suppose, what's sulfur called? The devil's bitch? I don't know.
Brimstone.
Brimstone, there we are, brimstone. It's called that. It's got a much cooler name. But yes, the colour of a deadly creature reportedly discovered by a man trying to make gold out of his own urine.
Well, as one does.
As one does. So this is the origins of phosphorus. Now, phosphorus, a powerful poison, it has made appearances in Agatha Christie. One very notable one, in a very spooky way.
Okay.
So phosphorus was... Cover your ears if you don't want to hear the plots or the twists of any Agatha Christie murder mysteries. I think it's Dumb Witness that phosphorus made a feature, because someone was conducting a seance, the victim was at a seance, and then there was a glow around her body. And everyone's like, oh my God, it's a ghost. Ooh, it's ectoplasm coming out of her. And actually it was because she'd taken phosphorus and it was glowing a little bit.
Oh, I know, yeah. I'm sure that's more like a uranium sort of side effect or something.
Harder to get hold of. Phosphorus, another poison that was prescribed as a medicine, mixed in with strychnine, obviously.
Of course, do you the world of good.
Oh, yeah, yeah. A world of good. It treats you very well. Obviously, you reduce it in the body. It helps to grow the jaw and the teeth, but it also can fuck shit up as well. It's a technical term. Let's go back to the origins, the childhood of phosphorus. Indeed, it was Hennig Brand in the 17th century who was an alchemist and was convinced, having probably tried everything, he's going to boil his own wee to get gold.
Why not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're desperate times.
It's got to come from somewhere. Measures. It's got to come from somewhere.
A gallon, buckets and buckets and buckets of wee his assistant gathered.
Wee is well used in history.
It is.
So used for many, many things.
An interesting leap to go, will urine produce gold?
I mean, but then someone else leaped into, will urine tan leather? Will? So someone goes...
I mean, it produces lots of good things. Yeah. Wee. Never usually the thing that people set it out
not,
to
But
produce.
Unfortunately, not gold.
No, not gold, not gold. So he collected many buckets of wee. He let it stagnate, so worms grew in them.
Worms grow in wee?
Apparently they did.
I must admit, I've not left a bucket of wee out for a while.
It's probably maggots or something. Just left it out. Just left it out to stagnate. It wanted to get really ripe. And then it was a process of boiling it down into a paste. A nice paste, and then burning it, and that produced the white solid, a red oil, and a black
paste.
And gold! Not gold. No, they were waiting for that colour to come up. No, white, red, and black. And they noted that the white solid tasted salty. Why?
Well, you've got to experiment. You've got to figure these things out.
I do think that's the assistant as well. Like, who's been collecting the buckets of wee going, you taste it.
Taste it. Yeah,
it tastes salty. Interesting. Tastes wee-like. No further notes on this day. But through multiple burnings and boilings, a substance was produced that had an interesting side effect.
Killed people.
No, the assistant wasn't dead by then. I think you're going to blame him having to drink buckets of urine, probably. Will that produce gold? No. It glowed in the dark.
Always handy.
Which is incredible for the time.
I mean, that would have been quite magical.
Yeah.
Now, first time to see a glow-in-the-dark thing.
Yeah.
That'd be ooh, witches here.
It is a paste that glows, that actually glows, and that's what phosphorus does.
Was it solid green?
It was a thing of purest green. No, it wasn't. But they named it phosphorus, the Greek for light bringer.
Yes, indeed.
Light bearer.
Yeah.
Bringer, bearer,
same thing.
No, it's not. You bring some light or you bear some light.
Well, you bear it to somewhere.
I mean, I suppose. Bringing sort of implies it's a gift. Bearing it's in like, this is mine, you can't have it.
It's my light, fuck off.
That's how I would interpret it, yes. So obviously phosphorus has evolved from its urine experimenting days, been refined and developed over the years. Now, it was discovered through many very painful and upsetting experiments that you cannot use phosphorus as a light source because it's very explodey.
Not ideal around flames.
Highly flammable. Highly flammable. So trying to put it in a lamp, this will guide my way, bang, death. Anywhere near any kind of spark or any kind of raising temperature, it will... Yeah,
make ink out of it. Make it a book.
Oh, right.
With glowy letters.
Yes, again, very flammable, explodey.
Well, don't burn your book.
Don't hold it near a candle, which is what everyone read by back in the day.
Well, if it's glow in the dark, you don't really need a candle, do you? It's the whole point of having glow in the dark. I don't need a flame.
Are you fully going into that kind of write secret messages in glow in the dark ink?
No, I was thinking, I'm just going to read a book. I don't want to go downstairs. My candles are downstairs.
Right.
I don't want to go downstairs. I'm all cozy and comfy in bed. I open my book and it glows and I can read the book.
Well, there might have been another problem with that.
Yeah.
If you had managed to have glow-in-the-dark ink, which was always the dream, it stank.
That's less fun.
Absolutely horrific smell. It's commonly said to smell garlicky. The great Dr. Catherine Harkup, who has been a guest on the show, has written in the past saying, yes, people say it's garlicky. She's worked with phosphorus. She's like, there's no smell on the earth like it. It's just horrific.
Right. That's less good for a book in bed.
No. And not good for lighting as well. So even if you don't explode from fiery death, then not so great.
You're gonna smell.
No, it's terrible. It's terrible. Now, again, another little side note here. Phosphorus for a while was... sort of very vaguely linked with spontaneous combustion.
Nice.
Now, I love a few stories about spontaneous combustion to the point where I kind of want to do an episode on it.
Yeah,
but it's...
I have crossed that. That has crossed my mind before.
So I remember reading those books of great mysteries from the world and those famous pictures of like ashen
yes,
lumps. But there's a foot. There's a foot because someone spontaneously combusted.
Oh, it reminds me. It's a tangent.
No, no, go.
Back in the days when I used to smoke. Don't smoke, it's bad for you. I was out in Hong Kong on a work thing once, and I was going to, and I bought a pack of Camels, my cigarette of choice at the time. And this was just when they were introducing, you know, the pictures of horrible things on packs of cigarettes.
Yes.
And such like. And there was one, and I kept this pack for years and years because it was such a brilliant image. There was a skeleton in an armchair.
I think you've told me this.
Yeah. So a skeleton sitting in an armchair with sort of hand holding cigarette.
Yeah.
As if sort of like, don't fall asleep with your cigarette because you'll catch on fire.
But the cigarette was fine.
The cigarette was fine. The skeleton was entirely articulated with a hat. And it was the hat that was like, yes! So it's entirely perfectly sort of articulated skeleton sitting in a chair. Apparently this chap fell asleep with his cigarette, set his chair on fire, burned him to a crisp, left the bones pearly white and entirely, yes, articulated, but his hat survived.
His hat survived. Those fireproof hats.
Fireproof hats. He is him and his asbestos hat.
That is brilliant. Who thought of
I
that?
Know, brilliant. Just... I'd say I kept that packet for years because it made me, I pissed myself in the street looking at this. Somewhere over the years, it went walkabout and I threw it out or something.
But... I understand the early marketing approach to that because you've got to convey a message very quickly.
Yeah.
Whereas obviously later they use shock tactics and go, let's just use real images because fair enough. But back then, like, we can't use a dead body. Let's use Clive, the skeleton that we have as a prop.
Exactly. It was like some sort of high school sort of plastic skeleton that's been posed on this armchair.
It's funny that you should say that, though, about spontaneous combustion. I'm not going to go too off on a tangent on spontaneous combustion because I feel like it's a whole separate thing. But people questioned the cases of this phenomena, as it was called, about how the human body could burn. But in some of those instances, you know, the clothing was okay or like some of the things they were holding were unaffected. So it was all like, oh my God, what's happened to this person? That's what led people to think they've been cursed or it's the devil's fire or things like that. A few people started to try and draw conclusions that phosphorus might have been involved because phosphorus is produced in the body. And they go, phosphorus, it's Bernie. It's Bernie stuff. That's the extent of the science.
Yeah.
Because I did some Googling trying to find anything that kind of was like, no. There was a story in the Manchester Guardian in 1825, and this is taken from a piece in the Guardian about spontaneous combustion. And this is a little side, but I like it. It's like, Dr. Trail has recently discovered a peculiar kind of oil in the human blood, which is highly flammable, which is explaining spontaneous combustion. The oil is chiefly observed in the blood of persons who have been addicted to drinking ardent spirits.
Oh.
So it goes on to kind of just conclude, if you're a pisshead, then you'll catch fire.
Okay.
It's probable that this discovery may tend to elucidate the hitherto inexplicable phenomenon of the spontaneous combustion of living human bodies.
Right. And that's not just somewhere falling asleep with a glass of vodka, spilling the vodka on themselves.
And then with a
cigarette in the other hand.
And then Bernie death.
Then Bernie death.
Yes. One we should come back to, but yes, phosphorus in the body, not known to make you suddenly burst into flames, even though some people would have it known that that is the cause of it. As we said, with phosphorus, even though it helps us to grow bones and teeth, it also comes with a terrible, terrible curse.
As to all the good things.
I do. One of the most gruesome stories associated with phosphorus, do you want to have a guess at it? Is there a phrase you might be familiar with?
Well, I mean, there's... The famous one that springs to mind is like the Matchstick Girls.
Yes, the story of the Matchstick Girls.
Is it Fossey Jaw?
Fossey Jaw, absolutely right. Yeah. Fossey jaw. This is where the white vapours, in so many words, of phosphorus seep into the jawbone and completely fuck it up.
Yeah, make your face fall off.
Destroy it. So working with phosphorus, as people did in factories for decades and decades and centuries even, working with phosphorus, if you're around it for too long, white phosphorus in particular, it is going to mess up your body. It's going to seep into the bones, and particularly it goes for the jaw. So it would start with a toothache. It would start with people complaining of toothache. They go to the doctor. The doctor would go, just take the tooth out. Who cares? And they'd be like, okay, take painkillers, send you on your way. But soon holes develop in your jaw. And these holes are then seeping very disgusting pus.
Yeah.
Foul-smelling, awful, suppurating wounds. And then your teeth are falling out. The bones are rotting slowly, steadily, until some or all of the lower jaw predominantly has to be removed. Yeah, falls off, drops off, or just, and you've got awful pictures of it all swollen.
You really have, absolutely. Yeah, some of the pictures are just horrid.
Horrific.
Horrific. Yeah. So is that because people are eating stuff that's covered in like phosphorus dust or something? So that's why it's getting into your mouth?
Just breathing it in.
Just breathing it in.
Yes, you can be eating it as well as, well, the people who worked in these factories would be surrounded by phosphorus for up to 10 hours a day. And they were not allowed to go into break rooms to go and eat their lunch. So you have to then get your packed lunches out and eat around phosphorus. So also when the Fossey jaw sets in, it glows sort of green white in the dark. So that's horrifying for your children.
Yeah. I remember there are stories of when, slightly different with radium was came out, which man you...
another story about the radium girls.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And they used to paint watch dials and things like that with radium to make those all glow in the dark. And they used to like paint their teeth and things like that to practical jokes with their boyfriends and stuff like that. They used to paint things on their teeth and stuff, and then their face fell off.
Well, actually, the worst thing was is just they had the brushes.
Yeah,
and they just lit them, you know, kind of like, oh, make them all pointed. Yeah. So they sort of suck the brush tip as you would do.
Yep.
And then radium. And then hair falls out and then death. But yes, where do you get a hefty dose of phosphorus poisoning back in the day? It is, of course, in the match making factories. Match factories, what a lovely, lovely Victorian tradition. There's so many stories, like fictional stories, but also a couple of stories we've covered where there's a match factory.
The match factory.
Because it's sort of personifies... We've had a story.
We've had a couple of brush factories.
Who could forget? The sexiest factories of them all.
Exactly.
We have had a match factory. It figures also in a work of fiction that I really like as well, so I'm hoping I'm not amalgamating the two. But we've definitely talked about match factories. Yep. Big production and, you know, massive in demand. Matches suddenly,
everyone wants a match.
You
make their Sazeracs of an evening.
That's the main thing.
It's the main export for matches is Sazeracs.
It is. Particularly Strike Anywhere matches. Before you had to just rub two bits of wood together to light a cigarette, but now you have Strike Anywhere matches, and white phosphorus is used predominantly on these matches, and so you can just, like, you know, those old timey films of just
you do on a brick or something like that.
Flick your match logo at a wall or on a child or anything, and then light your cigar and walk around town looking cool.
Looking cool, absolutely.
So, interesting brand name for one of the most popular types of match, Lucifers.
Oh, nice.
Lucifers, because the white phosphorus was mixed with sulfur in the mix, and it gave a smell of sulfur.
Yeah, that'll
when
do
you
it.
Struck it.
Yeah.
Oh, good marketing there.
Yeah,
good marketing.
Definitely.
But yes, you've got matches dipped in sulfur, white phosphorus, potassium chlorate, antimony sulfide, powdered glass, and colouring.
I mean, all the good things in life.
All the good things. What a factory to work in. Lining up they were. But yes, demand for production was incredibly high in the 1800s. So factory workers could be producing around 10 million matches a day.
It's a lot of matches.
And these are sweatshops.
Oh, gotcha. Absolutely. Yeah.
They're
horrendous.
Not nice places to work. You can get work, steady work, regular work. A lot of women are working
there. Absolutely.
Predominantly women. But yeah, you are paid a paltry sum and you have to supply most of the goods yourself. You know, the wood is there and the phosphorus they give you, but you've got to supply your own glue and you've got to supply your own string for putting the matchbox together. And you would be fined repeatedly through the day for any tiny little thing over a
dropped a match on that, so that's coming out of your wage.
Oh, yeah, a burnt match, something like 5 shillings.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is enormous.
More than a box of matches.
A box of matches, you were shot. But yeah, a 10-hour shift, you'd be working in the factory. If your bench was untidy, fine. If you had dirty feet, untidy. A lot of people couldn't afford shoes. They're coming in there, and but I've had to walk through mud and shit to get here, but your feet are dirty. Who's looking?
Yeah, who cares?
Yeah, being late, anything like that, fine. So people are basically earning nothing. And one such factory, the evil ones, Bryant and May. Now, there is a company today, Bryant and May, they have no bearing on...
They bought the name or something.
One of the biggest suppliers in the UK and beyond, their match factory started, they're a pair of Quakers who started it, but their production became so strong, they had demand and they were exporting soon. So obviously they've got plenty of workers. And they are ruthless in terms of how they treat their staff. They do not care a jot for anyone's health and safety. Now, the problems with white phosphorus have been documented for many years. Certainly about 20, 30 years previously, there have been reports now coming out saying white phosphorus can cause phosgene. This is damaging. First case that was heavily reported was back in 1838, but we're now in the late 1850s. Bryant and May are aware that people's jaws are falling off.
Well, if they choose to work here, they know the risks.
Absolutely.
It's their own choice to work here. If they don't want to work here, then they don't have to.
And if a single worker complains of a toothache, then they demand they go and get the tooth extracted or they are fired.
Yeah.
Get rid of it. Get rid of the evidence. There were treatments. There were ways of dealing with this, but they did not want to know about it because switching from white phosphorus to red phosphorus even, or to other sources, more expensive.
More expensive. Absolutely. More expensive. It's all about the money.
And they didn't have to. Yeah, it's, you know, not their problem if people get sick. So it's now 1888.
Okay.
Jack the Ripper is tearing through jaws. Now, many countries by now had banned the use of white phosphorus in factories, but not the UK.
Not the UK,
no,
absolutely
we shall
not.
Cling on. We shall cling on.
Who should do the old ways?
And in the face of this continual use of this really, really damaging product, there are articles now being written, and famously, an article comes out from women's rights activist Annie Besant, who lays out the horrifying conditions of the match factory girls, what they're working in, and how damaging phosphorus is, and all of the horrors that these people are facing. The workers read this. Shit, really?
Really? That's what happened to me.
Bryant and May read this. On the 2nd of July, 1888, they read this and they go, oh, no, this won't do. And they go to the factory floor and demand all of their workers sign a document that confirms that her writings are false.
Right.
Yeah. Annie Besant, none of that's true. We're all very happy. Yeah. We love it here. So the workers refusing, probably one of them can't open their mouth. Can't say anything. Jaw drops off on the floor. Bryant and May go, okay, fine, you're fired. They pick one woman out, you're fired, you're dismissed. for not signing this paper. Yes, let that be a lesson to the rest of you.
Absolutely.
Not letting your jaw fall off.
This couldn't possibly backfire.
Hmm, okay, it's a lesson all right. 1,400 workers down their tools and walk out on strike. It becomes the Match Girls strike.
Good for them.
Yeah. International Women's Day this week. Woohoo! Yeah. Brighton and Mango, it's okay. We'll get the sack girl back. It's fine. We'll patch up her jaw. We'll just say it's lovely. Good as new. They're like, no, we're not coming back in.
Don't think so.
The women stand their ground. They demand fair wages. They demand the repayment of unfair fines and having fines stopped completely. They go to Annie Besant. They go to MPs. The noise of the strike rumbles and grows louder and louder. And Bryant and May do not want the bad publicity. Oh, and they don't want to lose favour with the MPs. Obviously, they're very pally with the government. You know, they're a huge industry. Yeah. Okay, we need to calm this down. Eventually, talks are negotiated between the main women who walk out and the leaders of the group. And all parties, they agree. They agree to end the unfair fines. They agree to a better complaints process where it's not just them, the foreman, going, none for you.
A box that goes straight into the bin.
Someone comes up with a jaw in their hand. Okay. And also letting them eat their food away from the phosphorus.
That'll do it.
That was it.
That'll
Can help. We have another room away from the poison? Yeah. So they're not good sandwiches dusted with poison, as you said. There we are. The strike ends on the 16th of July. Phosphorus would continue to be used in factories until 1901. It still hung on in there for Brian and May. They eventually change their tune because of the bad press. You know, it doesn't go away for a few years.
Well, then they start using it on the trenches in World War One, which is much more fun.
It's white phosphorus is banned in 1910, and they go, excuse me.
Yep. We'll take that to the army.
But phosphorus gas can, of course, be used to kill intentionally, Nick. Not the easiest one to wield, but it was a favourite tool of the Merry Widow of Windy Nook. And I think before we get to our story, it's time for another drink.
Probably.
And more sausages.
Sausages.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, Nick.
Yeah?
We have our drinks.
Well, we have another Sazerac.
We do.
But a non-smoky one.
A non-smoky one, so let's have a go.
I'm going to say there's definitely a difference.
Yeah. 100%.
There's definitely a difference in there.
I'm not getting spikiness. I don't know whether my taste buds have been dulled now.
By the sausages.
I me, right, guys, full disclosure, we need to eat dinner before we record this, because Nick very kindly brought some snacks earlier, and we have done nothing but hoover yeah. them up.
So there'll be a lot of munching going on through
literally,
this episode.
Throwing cocktail sausages in our faces, little hammy, cheesy roll-ups, nuts. that don't have a nut before you record. They're everywhere. So maybe it's that, but I do think there's none of the spikiness that was there.
And I like the spikiness.
Well, yeah. So it makes a difference.
I think it might. Yeah, I was surprised how much a difference it has made. But yeah, no, it's good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not unpleasant without.
It's a lovely, lovely drink.
Bit of smoke. Yeah, go with that.
100%, guys. Try it. See if you find a difference with it. But we have our drinks.
Yes.
Would you like to hear the tale of the Merry Widow of
Windy Nook? I think we probably should.
Because it does sound like a fairy story.
It does sound very quaint and very twee.
Merry Widow of Windy Nook.
Windy Nook.
It's a place.
Yeah, I get that.
It's a real place.
Yes.
I didn't make it up. Imagine if I did that once. I just went rogue. I mean, we could. Because really, is anyone...
Who's going to know?
Well, actually, our listeners would. They would go, that's not a real place. But then who's Googling all the places that we say each week?
I'm not.
You're not. But anyway.
I trust you implicitly.
Hooray! All of this is absolutely true.
It's absolutely true.
100%. So it is the story of the Merry Widow, Mary Wilson. So Mary Wilson, born in County Durham in 1889.
Ooh.
She was Jack the Ripper.
She was Jack the Ripper.
Yeah.
Very, very young Jack the Ripper.
Very, very young. She controlled people with her mind from the womb. That's dark.
It's weird.
Now, not much is known about her childhood beyond all the murders.
It was windy.
It was windy. No, she had a pretty modest upbringing, as far as we can see. Not from a wealthy family, because she went into service at a fairly young age. She would lie about her age a lot in later years.
Okay.
So we think she was born in 1889. It could have been many, many years before that. No, she.
Well, you're 75, and you keep on telling people otherwise. So one does lie about these things.
Well, when your skin looks this good. She would end up in the service of the Knowles family.
Okay.
For the life of me, I could not find out what the Knowles family did. They weren't exceedingly wealthy. They were not like high gentry or anything like that. She was probably the charwoman. Mary was a good worker. She was very keen on their son, John Knowles.
Okay.
So her employer's son. He was a chimney sweep in some stories. A labourer, he's called otherwise.
Okay.
So
really not... If they're sending their son up the chimneys... Yeah. Not a wealthy family employ a servant themselves.
Yeah.
Is okay.
Well, that's why I was trying to find out who the Knowles family were because they say he's a labourer. He could be a foreman. He could be in charge of a labouring business. He could be in charge of all the chimney sweeps of Durham.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. But yes, she was in service there, fell for John. I like the look of you and your big brush.
Yep.
Yep. Young man around her age.
It all comes back to brushes, doesn't it?
There's never a story.
It all comes back to the brush.
Where there is not a brush involved. The pair hit it off. They began courting and they began a kissing and then they began a sexy and then they married in 1914. Now, the pair settled in Windy Nook.
Windy Nook. Where is Windy Nook?
Gateshead.
That's less exciting.
Why is that less exciting?
Well, Windy Nook. That sounds lovely and twee and lovely, Gateshead. It's like has less of a romantic vibe about it.
I think back then probably it was a little bit more quaint.
Was it?
Than just the sprawling metropolis it is now.
Okay.
Gateshead.
So they had some gates with heads on them.
Yes.
It was a really terrifying place.
That's what started it.
Their
cottage.
There's actually a massive wall around Gateshead. They get the heads of their enemies on the gates.
Yeah. It was Game of Thrones city.
It's a very scary place.
Tourists would come by eating an apple going, that place is weird. Steer clear
Not
of that.
Not going there again.
But they settled in Windy Nook with all of their heads. For 40-odd years, nothing happens.
I mean, that's nice.
That's nice.
I quite like 40 years for nothing to happen. That'd be lovely.
They have some children.
Yeah.
They have some grandchildren.
Just pootle along. Pootling in Windy
along.
Nook.
Absolutely fine.
Quite content.
Mm. But then...
Oh.
It's around 1954. For some reason, Mary gets bored of everything.
Well, she's middle-aged. One does get a bit sort of... Oh, what could have been?
So going from like, oh, I'm perfectly happy to...
I could have had a life. I could have had adventures. I could have been in love.
The one-horse marriage seems to bore her a little.
The one-horse marriage?
Yes.
Is that a thing? Did she marry a
one-horse town or a one-horse marriage?
Oh, right.
I was doing a little play on words.
Were you?
Yeah.
It worked well for you.
It's very clever. You wouldn't understand.
No, probably not. Apparently not. She married a horse? What's going on there? So, middle-aged, I'm really, really bored. I know, I'm going to marry a horse. Spice things up a bit.
40 years later, she'd be like, this pantomime horse outfit of yours is really not working for me. But her marriage, it's fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
But then they take in a lodger.
Is he a sexy lodger?
Oh, he's a lodger. He's a lovely lodger. He's a little older. He's a painter. Yeah. A painter. Ooh. Draw me like one of your French girls. A painter by the name of John Russell. And he's nice. And they become very friendly and very chatty and very shaggy of all hours. And wouldn't you just know it, in 1955, Mary's husband John dies suddenly.
Oh, God.
Of TB. These things happened. TB. Yeah. Tuberculosis. Okay. He's 76.
Oh, wow. He's had a good innings.
Exactly. Yeah, old people die. Old people die, as she would say. Oh, no. But now Mary is free to shack up with John Russell.
Oh, no. What a terrible thing.
So, like, lovely, sexy lover. Then move in with him.
Is he a horse?
He is. He's hung like a horse. If legends are true.
The legends that we've just made up.
I told you should believe everything that's in this story, mate. Yes, so they shack up. It's okay, he's there to comfort her. He already lives there.
Comforting.
Her hour of need. 5 months after her husband, John, dies,
yes,
she shacks up with John Russell, the painter. She marries him. Now, some say that they just moved in together. Others say that they were married. Okay. But all is well. All is well. They are together. Until John Russell mysteriously drops dead in 1956.
Well, people do.
People do, but a year later.
And he's an older chap as well.
65.
Yeah, I mean, he's had it coming.
Yep, natural causes.
Yep.
Now, this may be a bit weird. Why would she kill off two men so close to her so soon? I mean, she did inherit £42.
My God. I would do a lot to inherit £42.
That was a lot. Okay, well, there's no point moping about all over the place. You need to move on, Mary. You need to just find someone else.
Absolutely.
To shack up with. And sure enough, in 1957, Mary is married to husband number three, or two, depending, but let's call it number three, Oliver Leonard, a retired estate agent. Okay, now here is a nice man with a good pension.
Always handy.
Oh, they can settle down. They can live happily. She can put these unfortunate sudden deaths of her previous husband behind them.
Absolutely.
All is well. 12 days later.
12 days?
Days.
That's impressive.
He did.
Yeah, that's ambitious.
you're lost for words.
Yeah, I know. I'm thinking, well, that's bordering on the careless, I feel.
Apparently, he had fallen ill. He had fallen ill one night. Mary Wilson had called in a neighbour and said, he's not very well. Can you come round and look? And the neighbour comes in and goes, he's not very well. Maybe get a doctor. I don't know what I can do right now. And then she's like, okay, fine.
His jaw has fallen off.
His head has been cleaved in by an axe.
And is on the city gates.
By the morning, he is dead after the neighbours visited. Okay, fine. Mary inherits 50 English pounds.
Ooh. It's not a lot.
No.
Even in the 50s, it's not a lot.
It's really not a lot. But it's enough.
For what? A nice slap-up meal somewhere?
There's enough for Mary.
There's enough for Mary? Wow. Mm.
Mary dries her eyes with pound notes, no doubt. And is determined to move on. Move on again. It's all right. She moves right into a bungalow, also in Windy Nook, owned by a man named Ernest Wilson. Hence her surname. Where do we think this is going?
Where could this possibly be going?
She strikes up a friendship with Ernest.
Run away.
Oh, no, but Ernest is 76.
Oh, God.
And she is a nice lady. She's not a great looker, but she's friendly. She's got 50 quid.
I have a feeling he's not going to hit 77.
And they decide to start a relationship. It's wonderful. It's a good match. Kind, thoughtful. Ernest also has £100 in assets and a new great big life insurance policy.
Oh, how handy.
How she knows that or finds it out, I don't know. Maybe that's just the opening gambit and he's not talked to anyone for long. So he's like, is this how we flirt?
Yes. I have life insurance. Love me.
But of course, she and Ernest are wed. And they have a lovely, lovely wedding reception.
Oh, no doubt.
And local friends. A nice spread. Good spread. Vol-au-vents. Chicken legs.
A vol-au-vent.
A vol-au-vent.
Oh, yeah, now talking.
Sandwiches.
Fancy.
I don't know if they were vol-au-vents then. It's the old thing, isn't it? Vol-au-vents, chicken legs, sandwiches, yeah, hula hoops.
A bit of pineapple and cheese on a stick.
Oh, yes, 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 my friend. But definitely some sandwiches. Right, oh, there's fancy. Lots of sandwiches there.
Cut the crust off.
In fact, there's so much for me, there's some left over.
My God.
And a friend says, well, what do you want me to do with the leftovers? And Mary says, keep them for the funeral.
That
is absolutely true.
That's brilliant.
And I did a voice. I didn't know how the voice was going to come out there. It made it very, oh, yeah, I love. But yeah, he said, what do you want with it? Oh, no, keep him for the funeral.
Yeah, we'll need him soon.
They'll need him soon. Oh, what? People store this. People store this in memory. Walking away, there was a description of Ernest as well, the newlywed husband. Very happy. Oh, he's lovely. The manager of a local pub described him. I quite like the way this develops, by the way. Larry, who's known, was a cheerful fellow. He was not a heavy drinker, but he used to come in here for a glass of beer and read the newspapers.
Well, delightful.
He never wore socks.
Okay.
Not even on his wedding day. And neither did he wear a vest or underpants.
Or any clothes whatsoever.
He was well educated and a good mixer.
Right.
There's a lot buried in the middle of that, isn't there?
There is. There is, really.
I feel like the landlord of that pub.
The landlord knows too much, I feel.
Loved Larry deeply.
He knew he never wore pants. So, there was something going on there.
I know your body.
I can tell you're not wearing pants today, are you, Larry?
That's just...
Oh.
Oh, Larry, Larry, Larry.
Definitely the love of the dead or just speak its name.
So, yes, he knew a lot about old Ernest Larry.
Yeah, so it would seem.
But, oh, much to the heartbreak of that pub landlord.
He was distraught, I imagine.
Within a few months, Ernest is not well.
Oh, God.
And again, in a pattern, Mary turns up at a neighbour's doorstep and asks, can she spend the night in the house because her husband is not well and the doctor's seeing him and she thinks it's better whether she's pretending that there's germs or anything. Like, can right. I be away from
can
this?
Can I be away from my dying husband, please?
Crime scene. Here it is. The neighbour goes, oh, okay, yes, please stay over. Maybe the doctor has to, oh, maybe it's all a bit gross. Okay, come in, come in, come in. Next morning, the neighbour, Grace Little, takes her back to the house, walks back with her. It's like, oh, let's check on Ernest. Let's check on Larry. Goes in to find Ernest spread out on a table, dead.
Oh, impressive.
Okay.
Oh, Larry's been there, hasn't he?
The pub landlord was in there. So, yeah, he's spread out like, you said he was sick. Like, no, he's on a table. Okay, fine. He's laid out.
That's what he does when he's feeling a bit poorly. He gets on the table.
It's absolutely fine. So, neighbour goes away going, okay. But Mary is positively buoyant around town. Oh, absolutely bopping about. Nothing wrong. Nothing nice. Wrong doing
so
her
good.
Errands. She's chatting away to people. She has to go and see the funeral director, obviously. And she says to the funeral director, she really should get a discount for sending all this business his way.
She's not being subtle at this point, I feel. Mm-mm-mm. Really not.
And it's in one of the cases, we've talked about it many times, where people throw these comments around and no one does anything.
But they come back to bite you.
Oh, in Windy Nook, everyone is making a mental note of this.
There's a list somewhere.
They forget nothing. She arranges Ernest's funeral. She doesn't go.
Got more important things to do.
Oh, absolutely. Pub landlord is there crying.
He's at the graveside wailing away.
Holding his pants.
You've put him in pants. He never wore pants.
Put that in the eulogy. I really don't want to say that. That's too much. Okay.
Someone's dead. Stop laughing.
I know. It's not funny. Now, if you think this sort of behaviour should arouse suspicions, as I said, of course, much gossiping ensues. People are completely astounded by Mary's attitude to her dead spouses, and now they are starting to join the dots. Like, how many people have died who have known her, who have wed her? How many husbands has she buried? Whispers like this cannot be mere coincidences, and they start to ripple through the town, through the county, and eventually they reach the ears of the police. And the police go, no, okay, we need to look into this.
Yeah, something old's going on
this
there.
This taint right. So strange are the circumstances of her various husbands' deaths that the police order hubbies three and four to be exhumed and then to take a closer look at them. I will always say it, always take a closer look before you bury them. Yeah. We've learnt now. Mm. Now, pretty thorough. Back then, chuck them in the ground.
Chuck them around, yeah.
We can always dig them up. The worms won't do anything.
I suppose back then, there was no... There's all that possibility now, where the vast majority of people are cremated.
Yeah.
Once that's happened, you're not getting much... results out of tests and things. So you have to do all your things beforehand. Back then, it's like, we can dig them up when we need to.
Be thorough, guys. You got one shot at this. Whereas back then, we've got a few do-overs.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
As they examine the bodies of husbands 3 and 4, the bodies are found to contain very high levels of phosphorus.
Are they glowing? They open those caskets and just, it's like the Ark of the Covenant sort of thing going on.
And their face melts, the jaws rot off.
So it's like, yep, that'll do it.
No, they contain phosphorus and wheat grain.
Okay.
And it's surmised that she has fed them beetle poison.
Oh.
We don't get a lot of beetle poison. No. We get rat poison.
Yeah, a lot of rat poison, but no beetle poison.
The words beetle poison, I think, have confused some of the reports from later on. Because some people go down the line of this is cockroach poison. So insecticide. But also, beetle poison, what could that be?
Well, I was going for poison for beetles, but...
Yeah. So that could be cantharidin.
Yes, I see. Poison from beetles.
From beetles.
Not poison to kill beetles.
Indeed.
Okay, yes, I see where you're going with that.
So, yeah, there's different reports as we go, and it was difficult to determine whether this is hindsight reporting of people drawing conclusions or the actual accuracy. But either way, it makes it fascinating. It's very interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting. Interesting
what could
thing.
It be? So they're going, okay, wheat poison, and we'll come on to the types of poison. Meanwhile, Mary is denying all of this.
Pretty, of course.
Incredibly cocky in the face of her husband's bodies being dug up when asked by the local press about what she feels about this, because she's interviewed at the time. Says, I'm not worried about what they're saying. I can go to the Blessed Sacrament, I'm a Catholic, tomorrow. I take no notice of this tittle-tattle. It's all jealousy. I am not worried about what's going to happen.
Okay, jealousy of what? But
very, very confident.
Yeah.
She would also say of her husbands, I gave them nothing but kindness. Men like me, and I like men.
Fair enough. You go for it, love.
Again, I have nothing to hide. I know in my heart that I am completely innocent. At the trial, the defence apparently tries to claim that the phosphorus is actually because her husbands have been taking sex pills.
Okay.
A version of Viagra which might be Spanish fly.
Yeah, okay.
In the 50s. Yeah. Stimulants do little doses of cantharidin.
True, true, true. Aha. Yes.
So this is why I think you do get some of the confused reports, because you have some saying it was pure cockroach poison. It was like rat poison, but cockroach poison. She just like put it in their food. But actually, maybe what it was is that she had dressed up the poison in giving them pills, going, oh, here's a little bit of...
Isn't it something to help you along?
They're older men.
Yeah.
And she's enthusiastic.
Need a bit of an assistance.
Indeed. It is not long after the Spanish fly murders of 1954.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Because that was the 50s.
Yeah, 54 of Arthur Ford. So is it her thinking, okay, this is a handy way of killing people? Or is it just the defense going, oh, the men were taking Viagra and they died accidentally?
Well, also, I mean... If the chaps were taking it, they're probably not going to say no.
No.
They've got this woman here who, yes, I would like to shag you a lot. Take these pills and I will have lots of sex.
Yeah.
And you're going, okay.
Absolutely, madam. Yes.
Fine.
Yeah, so it's quite a compelling defence.
Oh, well, that's interesting. I like that.
It is.
Well,
it doesn't work.
Oh.
Because the prosecution go, fine, she was shoving sex pills into them to kill them.
Oh, yeah, well, absolutely.
And then they go, oh, no, we hadn't thought of that. Yes, absolutely. Go, yes, it's probably exactly what she did when she killed them as a result.
But cunning her to take that route rather than just like arsenic in the soup or something.
Well, yeah, if it's true, because clearly the defense got that idea from somewhere, whether she said that's what happened or where they go, okay, right, there's beetle poison. There was a case recently, this is what it is.
Where do they get the phosphorus from?
Well, yeah. phosphorus is in beetle poison. So it's
all
in,
mixed in together in a,
yeah, it's
in a big
so
old
it
pill.
Is in cockroach poison, so it's in some insecticides. Yeah. So it is, that's where that confusion comes into it. But I think there's a little traces of phosphorus also in some versions of this sex drug. But I think that's where it's confused, because I don't recall Spanish Fly containing phosphorus.
No, exactly. That's what I was thinking. It's fairly lethal in its own regard. So.
And this is where we can probably take a step back and go, have all these stories been mixed up? The weird reporting actually doesn't seem to quite make sense.
Because it's all happening around the same time in that sort of mid-50s sort of bracket. So it would all have been in the papers. Have they got, conflated with each other? So,
indeed. So they all kind of go, oh, it's sex drugs, but also like phosphorus in the body.
There's actually phosphorus in
the
body.
Was there any cantharidin in there? No, yes. But maybe it was a phosphorus sex drug that did not take.
Yeah.
Maybe she had an experimental cheap one.
Close it up, Willies.
Exactly. I mean, you would. You would buy it. He was trying to spice up the sex life.
Yeah, that'll do it. Glow in the dark.
Either way, the prosecution go, you don't care what she fucking did. She's a bloody murderer.
Well, yeah, she's killed four people.
She's killed four people. The jury take 90 minutes to convict her of murder. She barely flinches at the verdict.
Yeah.
Cheeks flush a little bit. She is sentenced to hang. She would be the last woman sentenced to death in County Durham. However, due to her age, it was commuted to life in prison. In jail, she continued to be completely jolly and jokey, as if nothing wrong had happened. And she would die of natural causes in Holloway Prison in 1962. Later, the bodies of her first two husbands were exhumed. They were also found to have high levels of phosphorus, but they just determined there was no point opening up a new trial.
Well, what's the point? She's in jail for the rest of her life. What's the point of going to that expense?
Yeah. She's in jail for life, always known as the Merry Widow of Windy Nook.
Oh, I like that story.
Yay.
Why haven't we done that one before? That's excellent.
To be fair with that story, probably the reason we haven't done it is that it's quite short.
Yeah,
it is quite short, so hence me making kind of like phosphorus special. It's too good not to do.
It's a brilliant story. Brilliant.
But the details...
Poor landlord. Poor Larry. Larry the landlord.
No, he called Ernest Larry.
Oh, right. Beg pardon.
The landlord. I don't think he had a name. It might have been Alan.
No, just landlord. Poor landlord.
Landlord. Who knew his body.
His newest body so well.
So intimately. Knew him so well. It's so random.
May have made that up.
But yeah, very short story. And the details, I did search and search and search through stuff and even look for particular books written on it and couldn't find any. Maybe people from the north of England can fill us in. Maybe there's some more detail that we don't know about. But yeah, a great story. Brilliant. And also, if we do phosphorus, we get to mention the wonderful Match Girls.
Oh, absolutely. Yep, absolutely.
And Fossey Jaw and Pissy Phosphorus.
Yep.
Pissy gold hunting.
Splendid, splendid.
Well, what do you think, people? What do you think of phosphorus, the fantastic poison? What do you think of the Merry Widow of Windy Nook? What do you think of her motives? What made her flip? What made her flip suddenly in old age? Did she suddenly see an opportunity because everyone was older?
Yeah.
She could do away with them more easily if you were a young man. Who knows? She never gave a hint of it. What do you think of the landlord? How did he know so much about Ernest's pants?
Or lack thereof.
I know he's not wearing undershirts because I've got all of them. What do you think of the Match Girls strike? A wonderful, wonderful piece of history, again, of people rising up to say, fuck you, to people who make you work in horrific conditions. Tell us what you think. Jump on the comments of this episode or wherever you listen on social media. Tell us your thoughts. Tell us your theories. More poisons you'd like us to do a special on. But most importantly, you should mix up a matchstick Sazerac.
Absolutely. The matchstick makes a difference. Indeed. It's really good. So yeah, the recipe will be out for this evening. It's a great one to try. And you will have all the bits in your cupboard. Nothing weird and unusual going on in there. Give it a go. You need a match. But the match makes a difference.
We should also mention that this week you didn't do an absinthe rinse, you did an absinthe spritz.
Oh, a spritz. Spritz. I've gone for a spritz.
You bought a little tiny bottle.
Yeah.
That does a spritzy spritzy.
Well, spray. And it's much better than trying to do an absinthe rinse, which is like pouring stuff in and twirling your glass. And just going spray.
And also, those bottles can double up as like a mouth spray thing.
That's true, with absinthe.
Anatomizer. Atomizer?
Anatomizer.
Anatomizer, yeah. So like a mouth spray, but just with absinthe. Yeah. Lovely.
will be unconscious very soon. I've had two of those drinks and I'm feeling really drunk.
Hooray! Let's arrange your bookshelves. Next week is episode 150 before our break, so we're building up to a big one. If you have thoughts or comments about particular big episodes that you want us to cover...
tell me what I should do, because apparently it's got to be a really, really big one.
Okay, Nick forgets that we've discussed this.
Oh, I forget many things.
Don't worry, I'll sit him down in his nice chair and talk him through it. Join us on Patreon if you haven't already. This weekend is our book chat about ACOTAR, and we're picking our new book as well. So if you're not a Patreon already, you want to be part of it, join before this weekend. Thanks for listening, guys. We have been the people inside the poisonous cabinet. We will see you next week. And remember, your loved ones are trying to kill you.
Boy.
The softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.